This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Ask me how I am, Simon. Thanks for asking.
I was just doing the technical details first.
Yeah, I know. But
how
I just want to get to the technical detail of, you know, I'm looking a bit tired. And the reason I'm looking a bit tired, Simon, is that I was really just up, you know, for a long time talking to my new friend Neil Young. We were just chewing the cud. And, you know, I spent some good quality time with Neil. He said, how are you, Mark? I said, I'm really good, thanks. He said, I'm so thrilled to hear you're a fan. I said, well, Neil, you know, that's we're really on. And I said, you know, do you have a message for Simon Mayo? And he said, who?
Well, he should have known that you were an mere arriviste, that you're a newcomer.
Arriviste, don't they run the trains between Southampton and London?
Almost certainly. But you had a conversion experience because you've hated Neil Young. In fact, you've slagged Neil Young off. I hope you told him all
no,
this.
No, I didn't.
I remember you saying Southern Man. Yes, we know what that's all about.
Well, that's all about. No, listen, I was very honest because I had to go out there for the BBC and do this. And the reason I had to was because on this very show, after years of baiting you for liking
you, realised that you were wrong.
No, I was wrong. I mean, I wasn't just wrong. I was cataclysmically wrong. I was wrong in ways that Fonzie couldn't even begin to mispronounce. I mean, I was hugely wrong. And I was watching the Jonathan Demme film, Heart of Gold. And I was sat down at the beginning of it. Oh, I don't like Neil Young. It's Simon Mayo's music. And then suddenly, three songs in, I literally, and I'm not making this up, because there was somebody else in the theatre who can attest to this, was tears streaming down my eyes.
You cry at everything we know.
No, but that was it. This was like, it was a Damascene moment. It was definitely, you know, it was biblical.
If only you'd listened to me earlier. I keep telling you.
It would have taken the sting out of the tail, though, rather, wouldn't it? I mean, it was like, it was the great, in a way, nothing you could have said could have done it. It's like that thing about, you know, faith is to do with a leap in the dark. It's not to do with somebody proving it to you logically. I mean, you could argue until you were blue in the face that Neil Young was any good at all. And it would just be completely water off a duck's back.
And then you get
or water off a DA in my case. But, you know, I had to actually be there and suddenly feel the mighty hand of Neil reaching down to say, it's okay. I'm not a whiny nasal droning sound. I am, in fact, the voice of the angel singing in your head.
Neil in Staffordshire. First, the good doctor is away for his holiday, and now he's back on a Wednesday.
I know.
But he's still the best film critic of the year so far.
And can we now, from now on, say and hello to Neil Young, and thank you very much for that best film critic of the year so far thing, because that's, of course, a reference to the Neil Sean debate, which is apparently raging after last week's intervention. Remember Neil Sean, the critic for... the red carpet walk of a Sky News, who's on the poster for Run Fat Boy Run.
Oh, right, yes.
Him. Fantastic, the best comedy of the year so far. Oh, no, it's not. It's a reference to the Simpsons movie. It's the worst day of my life. No, son, it's the worst day of your life so far. In fact, that quote, read me back just what he said, that text.
Right, okay. He says, if I can find it, Neil Smidgley, first the good doctor is away for his holiday. Now he's back and it's a Wednesday, but he's still the best film critic of the year.
So far. You see, I could do like a Shakespearean criticism on all the things that he's referring to in that simple two. It's like a haiku, really. It's not so much a text as a haiku.
Is that right? How
it
fascinating.
Is. Thank you.
Mayo,
you're thrilled to have me back, aren't you?
You're jet-lagged.
I am.
Severely jet-lagged. I don't think I'm going to admit Neil Young into our weekly hello because he's not a podcast listener.
He might be now.
Well, did you mention it?
No, I know, but I know that he Googles people before he agrees to be interviewed by them.
If he's a podcaster, we'll say hello to him.
Okay, how do I find out? Do I have to get Neil the high sign?
Well, he's your new best friend. Why don't you...
I'll just ring him up. That's fine. I'll ring him up.
3:10 to Yuma, December Boys, Disturbia, Shoot 'Em Up, Super Bad. We'll get to all those between now and 4
o'clock. You know, insert gag of your choice here.
Transformers at 10.
Ghastly, but my little boy says that I don't know what I'm talking about, and actually it's great.
Bratz at 9.
I mean, I haven't seen it. I'm going to have to
catch
see it.
Up.
I really don't. Well, have you seen it?
No.
No, well...
Have no intention.
Physician, heal thyself.
Am I a film reviewer?
No.
There you
no.
go.
No. And, and exactly.
That's why I don't want to go and
right,
see Bratz.
Fine.
Nor do I have to.
No.
Harry Potter, Order of the Phoenix at number 8.
You couldn't even say that, could you? And I'm the one that's jet-lagged. It's fine. It's not as good as Prisoner of Azkaban, but it is fine. I'm looking forward to what he does with the next movie.
Rush Hour 3... At 7.
They had kind of overstayed their welcome by the end of Rush Hour 2. It's a shame because Jackie Chan is great fun. He is a great physical comedian. Chris Tucker just gets on my nerves.
I've just lost the chart now.
The Simpsons movie at number 6.
Do you want to just run it yourself?
It's the best number 6 of the charts so far.
1408 at 5.
Which I'm looking forward to seeing. Largely because I like the writers. Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski, who did People vs. Larry Flint, adaptation of a Stephen King short story. I mean, all the best Stephen King films are from short stories. Shawshank Redemption is a perfect example, but I have yet to see it.
Knocked Up at 4.
Well, not seen it yet, and yet the debate will
rage. Watch it on the flight coming back from your Neil Young chat.
No. I, on the way out, I was listening to the late. Have you heard the late? You haven't. No, just me then. On the way out, obviously busy doing that. On the way back,
I was too busy listening to the new Elkie Brooks album.
Oh, really? And how does it measure up?
Stuffed full of hits.
Has it got any of the old Vinegar Joe ones, or is it all modern stuff?
Let's hope so.
She doesn't do the old hits anymore. She's like Lou Reed. She's turned her back on all that stuff. But we are going to do a review of Superbad, which is genetically linked to Knocked Up in unfortunate ways.
See, the interesting thing about you being wrong about Neil Young is that impacts on the Elkie Brooks conversation, because if you were so spectacularly wrong
on the Bono thing.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have said that a couple of years ago about Neil Young.
No. There is a difference, right? There's an absolute difference. Okay, my thing about Neil Young was largely due to ignorance and stupidity and not being able to hear and having a tin ear. The thing with you two is they are just rubbish. I mean, I absolutely guarantee you, I could promise you a limb that it's not going to happen. There's never going to be a moment when I put on the Joshua Tree, which incidentally is like an American band recording an album and calling it the Lake District. I am never going to have that moment with Bono.
This, of course, it has to be said, from the man who thought Elvis was still alive for a very long time after he died.
I didn't think he was still alive. I felt the case was still open. I felt that Gail Brewer Giorgio had some important parts and points that hadn't been followed up adequately by the FBI. Why was the corpse sweating?
And to that extent, you were entirely...
Well, I was open-minded.
Wrong.
No, I was open...
He was dead and buried.
...to there being more than one definite answer to that particular question.
I rest my case. The Bourne Ultimatum's at number 3. We've got to get some movies.
Yeah,
on.
I love Paul Greengrass. As you know, nobody else is
were
there for
a Were you the first?
I was the first and the only.
Atonement at 2.
It's not terrible. It's a brave bash. It's a failure. It doesn't work. You know, I saw Keira Knightley interviewed on the television and...
I think you're going to have to stop there. I think she's good.
No, she's not good in this. And she did say, yes, people have been very rude about me and said things like I'm wooden and everything. And I thought, well, that's because you are. But maybe things will change. But James McAvoy is very good and it's a brave bash. I think that Joe Wright doesn't quite get it. But it is a brave failure.
UK's number 1, Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Apparently it's simply the best, funniest, most perfect comedy of the year. This quote, copyright Neil Sean or Sean Neil. That's one of those two first names make a whole name, don't they?
He's almost certainly a hairdresser then.
Is he?
Yes. Yes, all hairdressers have two first names.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's not right. I used to know somebody called David Blair. He's a hairdresser. You couldn't be called... Oh, actually, you could. Blair David. No, you could. I'm sorry.
Again.
I stand corrected.
Really.
Yes. Well done. That's a good rule.
That's the top 10. It's 3:25. So we'll have some new releases then, please, good doctor.
3:10 to Yuma, which I saw in New York City yesterday afternoon.
Did you? Were you there? You squeezed it in
between Neil Young and the plane. So I saw it with a paying audience. And, you know, it's a fairly well-turned-out paying audience when you consider it was Tuesday afternoon. So it's, yet another... Ever since Unforgiven, which I know is almost a decade ago now, or more than a decade ago now, there's been this whole sort of, revisionist Westerns. It's okay, you take the Western, you do something with it, you make it slightly, politically interesting, but it is basically still a Western, and yet it's not, it's very modern. That stuff has been kind of saleable and acceptable. So, adapted from a short story by Elmore Leonard, who did Get Shorty and Rum Punch, which became Jackie Brown. Also, this has been made before. It's a 1950s film, this time directed by James Mangold. And James Mangold's most recent film was Walk the Line, which I absolutely love. Before that, he made that thing Heavy and the not very good Identity, but absolutely love Walk the Line. Basic story is Christian Bale is a down-at-heel rancher, severely wounded during the Civil War, now effectively one-footed, attempting to keep his family on track, but struggling very, very badly because the railroaders are coming and he's kind of in its way. Russell Crowe, meanwhile, is, guess what? He's a rugged, manly highwayman who does rugged, manly highwayman stuff. And due to some complex plot shenanigans, Christian Bale ends up agreeing to be the guy who takes him to put him on the eponymous 3:10 to Yuma, which will send him to prison. Here's a clip of their meeting in a bar. I think it's pretty easy to tell which one is which.
You got your horses back, didn't you? And your cattle?
Yeah, I got my horses back. But you killed two of my herd.
Hell, they died for a good cause. You know? Them beeves of yours. They wouldn't even fed a hungry dog. I tell you what. That should cover it. How much you get for a day's work?
$2. Want to hire out?
Well, there's $2 for half a day.
You took up my boy's time, too.
You're right. I did. Anything else you want to get paid for, Dan?
Give me $5 extra.
And what's that for?
For making me nervous.
Now, there are things to like here. I mean, there is plenty of... One of them is Christian Bale. Christian Bale is an incredibly changeable, chameleon-like actor, which is great. You know, you think of him, for example, in Velvet Goldmine, in which he plays that young kid who sort of falls in love with glam rock. You think of him in The Mechanic, in which he's, you know, he's incredibly wizened. He's so thin that he's almost like skeletal. You think of him in the recent Batman movie, you know, Batman Begins, in which he's kind of heroic and dark and brooding. And now this, in which he's... He's, you know, twitchy and withdrawn, and he's desperately trying to prove to his family, to his wife and his kids, that he can be a man, and yet somehow he feels that he's only half man. He's an actor of real range, real depth, and his accents are always very good. Interestingly enough, when he does a film in an accent, if he's then interviewed about the film, he does the interview in the accent so as not to distract from the accent of the performance. So it's weird, like, for example, if you look at the DVD of American Psycho, there's him at the premiere and all that stuff being interviewed on television in an American accent, because he's convinced that if he slips out of it or if people hear him in another accent, it will somehow, it will, you know, twist their ear off.
I don't think any other actor does that. In fact, they usually can't remember how to get back into that accent because they're doing the interview so many months or years after.
Robert Carlyle was the only other person, but he did it on set. I mean, he was once interviewed for Radio 1 about Face, the Antonia Bird movie, and he was playing a London gangster and he did the interview in the London gangster's voice, which was really weird, because you're saying, oh, okay, here, you know, here's Robert Carlyle, and then this bloke came on sounding for all the world like Ray Winston. And this was going, that's not Robert Carlyle, he's Scottish. That's right. It's like when you go, and now here's Doctor Who, and he's Scottish. You go, that's not Doctor Who. Doctor Who comes from Lewisham, doesn't he? Oh, no, fine, it's that bloke who's actually from...
David Tennant,
yeah. So, anyway, so he's very good. On the other hand, so it's a stretch for him. Everything he does, you know, you kind of feel like Christian Bale really puts himself into it. Russell Crowe, it's just like, pass me the script. What am I doing? I'm doing a rugged, slightly hairy guy who likes to get into fights with blokes, who's, you know, really good with the ladies and will have a couple of sort of bedding scenes in order to demonstrate his macho.
Or when he changes the bedding.
He changes the bedding, that's right.
Look at that duvet and he's a bit of fluffing up.
That's a man's thing to do. You know, a little bit of, you know, cushion fluffing is definitely a manly pursuit. But, and this is always important, he's rugged, he's stinky, he gets into fights, he likes shooting, he likes spitting, he likes swearing, likes bedding, but... He also finds time to do some artistic doodles of birds and bottoms, and occasionally of birds' bottoms. This is all in the film. This is literally what he does. And you can almost see the agency going, okay, we really like it because Russell gets to hit a bunch of people. But, you know, he's very sensitive. He likes art. And I wonder whether you could possibly put in a scene in which he gets to draw maybe a bird, and then another scene in which he gets to draw some... I mean, I'm not making this up. It's in the film. So, on the one hand, you have... all the good Western stuff. You have a great stagecoach chase complete with Gatling gun and just, you know, senseless carnage. You have lots of guys wearing quite exciting leather contraptions, which I've always liked. It's a little bit sort of
What sort of leather contraptions?
Well, you know, sort of coats like you wouldn't get made anymore. You know, like they've got like double-breasted like here, and then they've got some dangly bit at the back and a little scoopy bit so that you can get your hand on your pistol when necessary. And then a sort of frilly... you know, collar that makes you look a little bit Edwardian.
So it's a leather coat with a frilly collar.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Adam and the Ants. It's like, you know, Prince Charming, ridicule is nothing to be scared of, particularly when you're dressed like that, Boise, but you're packing, you know, a six-shooter. So there's all that stuff. And then you have, on the other hand, the sort of the really cliched stuff, which is what Russell Crowe does, and which is, he just plays the straight... the heroic guy who in the end, although he's the bad guy and he's killed loads of people and he's done all these terrible things, you know what, he's the guy that we all kind of blow along. So it's half an accomplished movie. I don't think it's a masterpiece by any account. I mean, there's a quote on the poster that says it's a masterpiece, but it appears to be by Bert Schneebly from, you know, WKBI in Cincinnati. Or
he's not a hairdresser.
No, he's not. He's absolutely not. And he's probably got a mullet, even as we speak. But it's half a good film, and the half of it that is good is largely Christian Bale, who I think is absolutely fabulous. I like James Mangold as a director. It's a little bit of a kind of a self-indulgent widget. I would love to see Russell Crowe doing what he did years ago when he was playing things like In The Insider, in which he played creepy guys, in which he played people who weren't heroic, in which he played people who were unlovable and, you know, awkward and difficult. Because he was a really fine actor before he became that really hunky guy who, you know, had the duff up with Malcolm Geary at the awards because they cut out his poem out of his awards speech.
If you just joined us, we're not pretending it's Friday. It's because there's a 2020 cricket on Friday, so we're off air. So we're doing our movie reviews now. It's a live stream as well on the internet.
Can I tell you one last thing about the film? Very, very quickly.
What, the film you just finished?
Yeah, yeah, it looks really good, and it's shot by Feed and Papamichael, right? Feed and Papamichael started out shooting Strip to Kill 2 and Body Chemistry, just like Wally Pfister, who started out shooting Carnal Crimes and all those things, ended up shooting Batman again. Once again, it's demonstrated there is no greater place to learn your trade as a cinematographer than in straight-to-video softcore erotic thrillers. Sorry, the evidence is there.
You say that because your wife says that, I suspect, because she is the soft...
How do you know she doesn't say it because I say it?
Because she's the soft porn queen. She's written about it.
OK, fair enough.
Does she know more about soft porn than you do?
Well,
come in, husband, let's sit down and watch a nice movie.
It doesn't work like that. It's an academic pursuit.
Of course it is, if you say so. Steve in Bristol says, a number of people, you call it the mechanic. I think the good doctor means the machinist.
The machinist. And actually, this has happened so many times before.
Jet lag.
No, it's not a jet lag. I've done that before. And somebody wrote on the internet, you know, what an idiot, can't even get the name of that movie right. And ever since they wrote that, I've actually been pathologically unable to call that movie. I think I once called it the Mechanist. I mean, literally, my brain was attempting to get to the Machinist. I can't do it. I'll always call it the Mechanic.
Matt, Luke and Ken.
Ken!
Yes, I believe.
Thank you, but thank you for correcting me.
Graham.
Ken.
Graham's watching the online streaming of this programme with two pale middle-aged guys talking about movies. Has Mark got a Harrington coat on? If yes, has he got his name on the back as per the 1980s? Secondly, does he not know it's rude to keep your coat on inside?
Did you know that having your name on the back of a Harrington is really, really sacrilegious? And a Harrington is not a coat.
What is it? A jacket.
It's a jacket.
Have you got your name in it?
No.
Why are you wearing it indoors, though?
It's not a coat. It's a jacket.
Doesn't really answer the
James
question.
James Dean never took his jacket off indoors.
Well, absolutely. There's a very good reason. Polly Rockberger. Splendid name. I'm very chuffed to be watching on my laptop in the kitchen while cooking for Rosh Hashanah. This is amazing. Sounds a bit jangly weirdo, though. but I love it. Sounds like a criticism of current musical trends.
It does, yes.
Loads of people making conversation about the way we look. And the more interesting stuff, Robin Salford Carey was from a Stephen King novel, not a short story. Does this mean the Bad Doctor's King rule is wrong, or that he thinks Carey is rubbish?
No, interesting case. Carey, of course, is uncharacteristically short for a Stephen King novel. I believe the novel is around about 200 pages long, whereas almost all of Stephen King's subsequent works were around about 500 pages long. So I think Carey is the exception that proves the rule, in that of the novels, it is the shortest one. Actually, the thing that doesn't fit is Dolores Claiborne, because Dolores Claiborne was a very fine film, and that's the one that I shot myself in the foot with.
Geraint in Chesham, some of your live stream experiments proving fascinating. I never realised just how dull working in radio is. Well, people in a room with a lot of papers, give us another review, please.
Shoot 'em up, starring Clive Owen, Paul Giamatti and Monica Bellucci. Shoot 'em Up is one of those films that happens because Sin City happened, and because there was a quote a long time ago, I think it was in the 1980s. Somebody in Variety said rather wittily, "Postmodernism means never having to say you're sorry," and it really stuck with me. It was one of those things about, you know, hey, all those things that we agreed to stop doing, like, you know, being chauvinistic and sexist and stupid and mindless and all the rest of it. Well, it's okay, we can do them again now because we're doing them ironically. So what you have is a movie ironically called Shoot 'em Up, in which Clive Owen plays a carrot munching gun toting guy who at the very, very beginning of the movie is in the middle of a gunfight, delivers a baby with a gun in the middle of the gunfight, and then goes off to find a fetishistic woman of the night in order to provide services that will enable him to be an... I mean, honestly, it's like I don't even want to go into the sort of description of this, because the whole point of it is, hey, it's so vulgar, it's so crude, but actually it's incredibly funny. And here's my whole problem with Shoot 'em Up. It's a comic strip inspired style action adventure, stupid. It's so ludicrous, you have to laugh. And there's loads of reviews, incidentally, from people like Maximum Loaded saying, oh, it's just great, you know, it's a real lads movie. Here's my problem with it. Firstly, it doesn't have any of the visual charm of Sin City. It really doesn't. I mean, Sin City got away with what it did because it was visually inventive. Sin City was empty-headed, vacuous nonsense, but it was very good-looking, empty-headed, vacuous nonsense, OK? Second thing is, if you're going to do things like make gags about, you know, shootings and all that stuff, you know, with babies and all the rest of it, well, please don't invoke the ghost of John Woo, who actually did that with some panache well over 10 years ago. And there's that iconic image of Chow Yun-fat, which I'm sure you've seen, of Chow Yun-fat with the huge big sort of, you know, assault rifle in one hand, cradling the nappy-wearing kid in the other. And it's a very iconic image in the same way as, for example, Sigourney Weaver holding Newt in Aliens with the, you know, huge, great, big alien flamethrower in the other hand. These are iconic images. Don't invoke them casually, right? But the reason they became iconic is because they came from things that had slightly more substance than this sort of secondhand, you know, hand-me-down nonsense. I sat in a room with a bunch of blokes watching this film, and the more blokey you were, the more people kind of seemed to enjoy it. And part of me was thinking, well, you know, maybe Paul Giamatti's having fun being, you know, really crude and really vulgar and really stupid. And, you know, maybe I'm just being uptight. And part of me thought, no, I'm really not. You know what? We went through great long discussions to get kind of to the point where we didn't actually think this stuff was big and clever anymore. We didn't think that, you know, every woman had to be portrayed as, you know, as a streetwalker, and every guy had to be portrayed. And I know it's not meant to be real. I know it's meant to be postmodern and self-referential. But you know what? I've been there. I've done it. Please stop. And Clive Owen, I mean, really, you know better. You've done much better work than this. You know, for heaven's sake, it just looks like the guy who didn't get the Bond gig thinking, well, if you're not going to give me Bond, I'm going to do this instead. It's going to come and go. Its entire target audience is six-packers with a curry on a Friday night, not in a good way. And I came out of it feeling just rather depressed and thinking, Loaded and Maxim are still in business, aren't they? That's really not good.
Lawrence in New Jersey. Simon, for the love of whatever you hold sacred, please stop Dr. Kermode trying to talk like an American. Think reverse Dick Van Dyke.
How did I talk like an American?
You're doing an American accent.
Oh, you mean when I'm doing an American?
When you're doing an American
accent.
Oh,
I see. I thought you meant in general. No.
Dick Van Dyke in reverse.
God, blimey, Mary Poppins, Chim Chimney.
Exactly, and that was pretty poor.
My American accent is fantastically good. I think Christian Bale studied it before he did 3:10 to Yuma.
It's 14 to 4. Is it super bad next?
Yeah, it is. And I've got to tell you that let's...
Don't spoil it.
Don't peek early.
Although I have to say, a number of people saying...
Oh, really?
Before Mark calls Superbad... Oh, well, we'll do it in just a second. We'll get lost. And Nick won't get on until Drive, really, which really wouldn't be done. I don't know if you're going to be streamed live over the internet, Nick.
But, I don't know.
Do the gag about...
Should I
have
put some makeup on?
Yeah, like us, we have
taken the shine off.
You can tell. Claire Louise Jones, expat listening in Florida. Before Mark calls Superbad puerile US teen humour, I would report seeing the movie on the opening weekend in the States. I have never heard a cinema laugh so much, ever. Mm-hmm. I need to see it again because I missed so much of the movie because I was laughing so loud. And I'm 36.
Mm.
Take it away.
I think that's kind of the key thing there.
Simon Offer on this says, don't you dare criticise Superbad. Don't. It's brilliantly funny. Don't care what the doctor says. Carry on.
It shares a genetic heritage with Knocked Up in that it's written by Seth Rogen, who starred in Knocked Up, and it's produced by Judd Apatow, who produced gave us the 40-Year-Old Virgin. And it's
both on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Fine. Nice?
Very nice, guys. Yeah, very funny.
Very glad. So it's a group
just
of...
Just because you weren't here.
No, what do you mean just because I wasn't here? I mean, if I'd known, I'd had seen the film in advance. So three guys, right? One fat, one skinny, one geeky. Three school kids. And what they need to do is they need to go and score a bunch of alcohol so that they can get girls drunk and so that they can do what it is that teenage boys aren't meant to do. And here's a highlight. When one of them, having faked his ID card to give himself the name of McLovin, is investigated briefly by the police.
You're the one that got punched.
Yeah.
Okay, first things first, what is your name?
My name, it's McLovin.
McLovin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's your first name?
What?
Your first name.
My first name? Technically, I don't have a first name, so don't worry about my first name.
But we're the police. So it's just McLovin?
Yeah.
That's badass.
It is badass.
Really
it's a
cool.
Badass name.
Yeah.
A lot of people weird names nowadays.
Chingy, Shakira, Rafe, Pax. Okay, and how old are you, McLovin?
Old enough.
Old enough for what?
It's a party.
Can I see your ID?
If you're old enough, you know, as I am, to remember Revenge of the Nerds parts 1 to 4, you get this terrible sense of, I think I went through all of this, I saw this movie being done several times before, and I saw Lemon Popsicle, and I saw Porky's, and I went through all of them, and they all were this film The difference was, at the time, there wasn't a bunch of middle-aged critics who got up and said, it's incredibly funny and postmodern and wonderful and we should all stop being snobby about it because it's really clever. What they said at the time was, if you're a completely, you know, unthinking, nitwit, adolescent, teenage boy who thinks that this is going to be hilariously funny, well, go, it's your lookout, but just don't come crying to us when you kind of realise later on you've been shortchanged. I mean, the uber movie for all of these is Animal House. And to some extent, what happened with American Pie was American Pie reinvented that genre. And it did. American Pie did do interesting things, and it was a funny film, and it you know, it had great comedy moments in it. But in exactly the same way that Scream then gave birth to I Know What You Did Last Summer and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer and all those terrible non-ironic slasher movies, American Pie gave birth to things like Superbad. I mean, there was a piece recently, I said I haven't seen Knocked Up, but I read the piece by Joe Queenan, in which Joe Queenan said, look, this is just ridiculous. We are now having to accept movies in which, you know, the ugly, stupid, porn-obsessed bloke ends up with the fantastically intelligent, you know, good-looking girl, because that's just the way it is. And I haven't seen the film, so I can't comment on that film. What I can comment about in this film is, it is a film in which the message of it is that the ugly, stupid, drunken, porn-obsessed guy actually does, of course, get the fantastically good-looking, intelligent girl, the twist being that she only wants him when he's sober, because there's a moral message in it, which is, hey, guys, drinking isn't good. Everything else, all the other stuff, is completely fine. The dialogue is chauvinistic in a way that actually, Andrea Dworkin, and he said Nicole Kidman, if Andrea Dworkin had written this script, I mean, you know, God bless her, Andrea Dworkin is gone there, but had she written this script, people would say, you're just over-egging it, Andrea. And men aren't that bad. Men really don't talk like that. Even the scummiest, scuzziest, nastiest, foulest, most misogynist, pig-headed slug of a teenager does not talk like that. It just doesn't exist. Maybe it only exists in America. Here's what I feel the need to say about this. All the people I know who've embraced this movie so far are middle-aged, and I have a terrible sense that what they're doing is retrospectively attempting to kind of, you know, forgive something because it's like, hey, you know, I want to be down with the kids. I'm sorry. This wasn't good enough the first time round. It wasn't good enough the second time round. But the third time round, with the kind of non-post-ironic slant, and it's really not good enough. There is stuff in the dialogue of this that genuinely made me think, actually, you need help, because it's so vile. It's so... I mean, I think if I was a teenage girl going to see this movie, I would think that really it's just time to give up. It is actually time to become a separatist and go and live off in, you know, in a jungle away from... Because if this is what now passes for acceptable... I know it's Revenge of the Nerds. I don't want to take it too seriously because it doesn't deserve to be taken too seriously. But you know what makes me cross? Not the film with its crass vulgarity and its incredible chauvinism and its attitude towards women, which I'm sorry, call me old-fashioned. I think it's just disgraceful and disgusting. Sorry about that. There we go. Okay? And you'll all think the same thing when you all wake up in the morning. It's, believe me, it's like one of those things. It seems like a good idea at the time. It won't seem like a good idea in the future. But here's the problem. I really, really do think if you were a teenage girl going to the movies nowadays, you'd have a terribly grim view of the world. And I'm sorry, I don't care what the movies say. It's not all like that. Blokes aren't like that. Don't care what everyone says. Don't care. It's not true. Not all blokes are loaded reading Neanderthals. Sorry, there we go. You know what? Some of them are interested in other stuff. And
sensitive, creative types.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I know how, you know, terribly, what do they call that music? Emo, that sounds. But hey, I'll be down with the emo crowd if that's what it takes to stop this. We have to stop. It's so vile. I mean, the dial, I know it's meant to be vile, but it's so vile. And the pasting on of the morality thing afterwards is just, you know, it's like, no, give me a break.
Have you ever confused Dworkin and Kidman before?
No, I haven't. It's a very, very bizarre Freudian slip. But you know what? One thing I did think at the end of all this, when I referred to this before, and I did the Linda Lovelace documentary, and I had the good fortune to meet Gloria Steinem. After seeing this, I suddenly thought, you know what? She's right. It really is bad.
Pakistan have beaten Scotland by 51 runs, by the way, in their World 2020 Group D match. That information came in about half an hour ago, but Mark was in mid-rant.
Sorry.
And I didn't want to interrupt.
Can I very quickly do the Simba Boys?
Daniel Radcliffe was on the programme yesterday, so...
We were going to play a clip, but I won't, because we're running out of time, because I've kind of rambled on. So it's December Boys is an interesting little film. It's a coming-of-age movie, and in any other week it wouldn't be particularly exceptional, but at least it isn't a loathsome, vile, hideous thing about, you know, young boys just being incredibly chauvinistic and loathsome and reptilian and vulgar and appalling in ways that are, you know, really quite so depressing. Now, I'm not saying It's a great film. It obviously owes an awful lot to things like Stand By Me. It's set in Australia in, well, either the early 60s or the late 60s, depending on whether or not Simon has picked you up.
As I said to Dan, when he was on, it's supposed to be set in the early 60s, except when he goes to put a record on, it's Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum, which came out in 1969, but a hit in 70, which means that it's probably early 70s.
Yes, and you presumably have Googled that, so you know that to be factually correct.
Just knew it anyway, just to be right.
Okay, well, it is true that that's obviously a kind of mistake, but a number of things to say about it. It's nicely shot. It's sweetly natured. I mean, it's a story of four orphans who go off. They get given a chance to have a holiday by the sea. They go off to this this remote cottage. You discover that one of the families may adopt one of them. Also, during the course of it, Daniel Radcliffe's character meets a young girl, and for the first time in his life, he discovers that there is, you know, more to relationships than just hanging out with the guys he's hung out with before. As I said, particularly in the context of this week, there's part of my heart which leaps to think, thank heaven somebody's actually still making this kind of old-fashioned, slightly hand-me-down, you know, not crushingly original, but nicely intentioned movie. Daniel Radcliffe gives it his best shot. I don't think it's a brilliant vehicle for his talents, because apparently he was terrific on stage in Equus, mm-hmm. and I'd love to have seen him in that, but he's perfectly fine in it. And it's, you know, it's a nice little diversion, and it's charming.
On the Hole in My Bucket scenario,
Dear Elijah, Dear Elijah, Andy endorses it.
Liza was Henry's wife, hence they were singing to each other. Sadly, society wasn't enlightened enough to allow songs about same-sex relationships back whenever. The Good Doctor is once again wrong. Chris says, well, the Doctor's admitted he was wrong twice. Now he's going to have to admit to a third. It is, of course, Liza. Len in West London, it's Liza, and it was the highlight of Sunday night at the London Palladium. And this, which you might like from Mark, there's a hole in my bucket, IKEA.
That's just very good.
Combining a number of things. Okay. Movie of the week.
Well, you know,
it's a bit early, but...
Well, generally 3:10 to humour, I think, because of Christian Bale.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.